Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
Aloha, America. Welcome. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. We're finally at the peak. We're going to start that long, slow glide down to Pauhana Friday and another hopefully relaxing weekend. Unfortunately, it won't be, but it sounds nice to say. A lot of stories to cover today. This is a live show, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is answering the phones today, so call in and say hello, and then come on the air and share your thoughts about what's going on. A couple of short stories to cover real quick, and then we're going to get into kind of the meat of what's been going on for the last 24 hours. A lot of people are very upset about this shooting incident up on the Bay Area Rapid Transit. A video has surfaced, apparently two videos have surfaced, where there was an altercation on New Year's between the Bay Area Rapid Transit police and some kids who were just out partying. And what made it really ugly is that apparently after this young man was subdued, lying face down on the ground, a police officer draws his weapon and shoots the kid in the back. And the kid died later on. A lot of people are taking the position this is just another classic case of a white cop deciding he wants to kill a black kid. The original story was that the gun discharged accidentally. The new story, the new spin going around, is that the officer thought he had drawn his taser pistol and thought he was using that. And I have a problem with this story for two reasons. One, if the kid is already on the ground, face down, subdued, the officer shouldn't have even been pulling his taser pistol. Second of all, I went over to the website of the company that sells these law enforcement taser pistols. There is such a difference in these weapons. I am finding it very hard to believe that a police officer could, first of all, grab the wrong holster, pull out the weapon, and not immediately know that he was holding a real gun instead of one of these little plastic and electronic taser units, you know, which are big and they're big and bulky all over the front. It's instantly obvious the difference between them. So I'm not sure. I think somebody just got carried away. We live in an age where police violence is quite common, and I think this just somebody got carried away, and they're trying to come up with a story that people will buy to let the guy skate off on the thing. Now, obviously, you've been seeing on the news there was this Oval Office lineup, and I don't know. I almost expect to hear a secretary in the back room saying, "It was that one, Mr. Prosecutor. That one did it." And I noticed that they've got Jimmy Carter all the way over on one side of this line, and George Bush Sr. all the way over on the other side of the line. They put them as far apart as they could. Carter wasn't looking all that happy to be there. And for those of you who don't know what I'm alluding to, because you're not as old as I am, I'm alluding, of course, to the two issues, the October surprise during the Carter administration that allowed George Herbert, actually allowed Ronald Reagan to take the White House away from him, and also the sabotage of Carter's attempt to rescue the Iranian hostages, which went nowhere because the equipment just broke down before they even got started on this project, and it was just this huge, huge embarrassment, and basically ended Carter's presidency and allowed Reagan, with George Bush as the vice president, to come into office. And then, of course, John Hinckley almost made George Herbert Walker Bush president a little early, but he wound up getting the job anyway a little bit further on. So apparently Obama and George W. Bush had a private meeting in the Oval Office. I figure George showed him how to open that little secret swinging bookcase off there to the left of the president's desk, you know, leads to the hidden stairway, and probably got, you know, bags of Reagan's jelly beans stashed back there and stuff like that. So they're doing their nattering and gromishing for the cameras. Meanwhile, over in the Middle East, in Gaza, the bloodshed goes on. Israel declared a three-hour ceasefire to allow the Gazans to go out and get fuel and food. And I'm sorry, 3 hours is basically enough time for the Gazans to get out on the roadway and get caught in the open trying to get back home when the bombs started falling again, which is exactly what happened. Now, Sarkozy is down there, and he's negotiated this ceasefire deal. He's been working through Egypt, and he's negotiated a ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinian authorities. And Israel and the Palestinian Authority have all agreed on what, you know, this is a good thing for us to stop shooting. You know, and they both agreed because the war is actually between Israel and Hamas. And Israel and the Palestinian Authority both want Hamas to go away, even though Hamas won the election. So obviously, you know, for Israel to go and talk ceasefire with the Palestinian Authority, it's like if the United States was at war with Mexico and it goes up to discuss a ceasefire with the government of Canada. It's something that's intended to look good in the press. Oh, Israel's trying to make peace and the Palestinians say they want peace. And then, of course, Hamas says, we can't agree to a ceasefire. We weren't invited to the discussions and negotiations. We don't know what's being agreed to. Not that anybody trusts Israel to keep their word about anything anyway. So Hamas has basically refused the ceasefire, and Israel's saying, see, we tried to make peace, and Hamas, they will have none of it. It's all their fault, and we are going to start attacking even harder than we have already. Now, the bottom line is, you know, the reason that Israel is doing all of these look-good maneuvers, manipulations in the press, this war in Gaza is a public relations nightmare for Israel. Perez is out there insisting he doesn't care about Israel's image. He's going to keep on, they're going to keep on doing this, and they don't really care what the rest of the world thinks about Israel, which is very tough talk. And obviously, people who are not going to agree with that attitude are Israel's tourism industry and Israel's exporters, who are even now feeling the pinch as boycotts crank up around the world. Now, despite Perez's bravado comment about not caring what the rest of the world thinks about all of this, Israel's PR people, they're playing for sympathy everywhere. We are seeing stories in the newspaper about, oh, we discovered these long-lost letters from my grandmother during the Holocaust and blah, 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 blah. We're seeing all these hate crime hoaxes, you know, the spray paint graffiti. All the stuff. They're playing every single trick they can. They're planting agent provocateurs and peace marches to go out there and scream obscenities about Jewish people that the media can then use to say, oh, see those pro-peace marches. They're really not peaceful. They're talking about throwing the Jews back in the ovens, blah, blah, blah. Classic COINTELPRO, classic propaganda. And frankly, one of my readers wrote in and said, given that we now know the attack on Gaza was planned a year ago, it is not surprising that the movie theaters right now are filled with all these movies about the Holocaust. And some film critics were even observing this. Why are we getting this flood of these downer Holocaust stories here? You know, Christmas time, is it because they're lining up for more Oscars? Because when you do a Holocaust movie, that's a guaranteed win of an Oscar. You know, you could just ask Steven Spielberg when he did Schindler's List. And the idea is that Israel is, once again, they're going to wave Holocaust at everybody to discourage people from complaining about what Israel is doing in Gaza. And the good news is, it's not working. Because, and I never thought I would hear myself say this, in this incarnation, I have to applaud CNN, because CNN just ran a story confirming that Israel broke the ceasefire with Hamas on November 5th with the attack that killed six Palestinians, an unprovoked attack, and they followed it up today with a story in which they confirm Israel is using white phosphorus on civilian targets in Gaza. Israel's denying it. They're saying it's not white phosphorus. Trust us. It's something that maybe it looks like white phosphorus, and maybe it smells like white phosphorus, and maybe it's setting fire to people like white phosphorus, but it isn't white phosphorus, and trust us, it's perfectly legal. Meanwhile, CNN got this military weapons expert on the air looking at the video and the pictures that we've been showing you at whatreallyhappened.com for the last week and saying, this is white phosphorus. And the military expert said, yeah, that's what they're using. They're throwing white phosphorus all over the neighborhoods, the civilian areas of the Gaza Strip. Israel wants to burn the whole place to the ground because they're not going to make peace with Hamas. They're going to go in and take Gaza over and make it part of Israel. It's an invasion and conquest. That's what it is. And all this talk about these little bottle rockets is as phony as when Hitler did the Gliwice thing to invade Poland. We will be right back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I want to direct your attention, if you go out to my website, whatreallyhappened.com, and look for the headline, One Very Brave Palestinian Woman. This is the most incredible video I have seen since the Chinese student put himself in front of a column of Chinese tanks at Tiananmen Square. This unarmed Palestinian woman puts herself between her village and a group of Israeli soldiers that are basically just pot shooting anything that they can see in the distance. And it's the most amazing thing. She's literally putting her body in front of their guns to keep them from shooting at her village. And it's just incredible courage because she's completely unarmed. And those Israeli soldiers, I mean, you can see them thinking. They're looking at the camera. They know they're under videotape. They're trying to decide if they should just go ahead and shoot this woman, which frankly tells you what the rules of engagement are. But I don't know who this woman is, but she is a hero in every sense of the word. Absolutely fearless and or courageous, because I'm sure she's got to be afraid. I mean, these guys are shooting everything that's inside. And she puts herself in the way of the guns to keep them from shooting at her village. And it's just amazing. You've got to go see the video. It will inspire you. It will tell you the quality and character of the people who are being bombed and white phosphorus and shot at right now in Gaza. Now, Israel has announced that 4 of 6 IDF soldiers who were killed in Gaza recently were victims of friendly fire. Now, one of two things is going on here. Either the Israelis are totally inept with their very expensive American weapons that we have very kindly given to them as Hanukkah gifts, or the Israelis are so desperate to preserve their public image that they would rather say that they accidentally killed their own guys than admit Hamas had done it. And, you know, either way, again, it doesn't make Israel look very good at all. All right, we're going to walk away from this Gaza situation because I know everybody's sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of hearing about it. You know, we're looking at all the photos and stuff coming out and all the kids coming out. The UN is very angry now. It is a war crime to attack clearly marked civilian facilities, in this case the UN schools. Right now, Israel is guilty of war crimes for the UN schools, for the targeting of civilians, for the white phosphorus. I mean, talk about your out-of-control rogue nation. That's Israel right now. It's just amazing here. All right, we're going to turn to the economy now. The Dow had a wild ride up and down. It ended down 245 points, firmly back in the 8,000s. And, you know, in this case, the Dow does seem to be following with the actual economic indicators. Alcoa Aluminum announced it is cutting 13% of its global workforce to deal with the slowdown in demand for aluminum. And this, you know, may be the origin of the phrase "to can your employees." Aluminum can. Aluminum can. Okay. I don't know. I figure with more and more people, you know, getting through their unemployment days by drinking beer, I figure demand for cans might be going back up again. But Alcoa thinks otherwise. Now, the ADP has revised their reports, their job reports for this last year. In December, just December, the 1 month of December, and this is during Christmas season when we're supposed to see a lot of temporary people being hired for stores to deal with retail. But in December, the nation lost 693,000 jobs. That's 693,000 jobs. And the Christmas season is over, and retailers are beginning to close and go out of business. I can tell you right now, the numbers in January are going to be a lot worse. Now, turning out to California, whose current governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is notorious for screaming that anybody who doubted the economy was healthy was being an economic girly man, California may have to delay their tax refund checks. You know, this is tax season. We're going to get back into that in a little bit here. Everybody is sending in their returns, and apparently California, even as it's collecting its state tax payments, is not in a position to issue the refunds for people for whom they overwithheld. I guess the checks are going to go out, and Arnold is going to write on each one, please do not cash until 2018, or something like that. So, yeah, it's getting really stiff out there. Now, interestingly enough, shopping mall vacancies, your retail vacancy rate, this is always a good indicator of what's going on, and shopping mall vacancies have hit a 10-year high as stores close and go out of business. We've been noticing that in the shopping malls out here. Lot of empty space. And interestingly enough, our local shopping mall down here at the bottom of the hill just did this expansion. They put on this little extension on the end with a whole bunch of new shops. None of them have been sublet yet. They're using them as display windows for the anchor tenants. And otherwise, it's empty, and a lot of these other places are going out of business. It's amazing. There's a little strip mall down at the end of the street here, which I know because that's where you buy the cool fireworks during New Year's and 4th of July. And it's about only about its units are occupied at the moment. That's how bad it's getting there. Now, credit card companies are responding to the crisis. They're starting to cut the limits. You're probably going to get a statement where it says, how much you owe and everything, and there's going to be a notice in there saying, we have to lower your maximum credit limit to XYZ, which will instantly make you over your credit limit, so you can't use the card anymore. Meanwhile, they're jacking up the interest rates on everybody. And it's a classic case of they're punishing the people who've been making their credit card payments to make up for the people who didn't. It's collective punishment, if you really think about it. It's collective punishment. They're penalizing all of us for the sins of the few, which is what the whole bailout thing was all about. Now then, you probably heard on the news that the Internal Revenue Service has announced a policy of leniency. We're going to be a kinder and gentler pillager of the people. They recognize that Americans are struggling, and so if you are owing taxes, they're going to want to work with you to work out some kind of an agreement or a deal of some kind. Now, this doesn't mean they're letting anybody off the hook. They're just willing to drag the payments out a lot longer and perhaps be a little bit less abusive in getting the money from them. But, you know, I predicted this was going to happen a couple of weeks ago when I said right after Christmas and New Year's, we started seeing a flood of commercials for all these tax problem resolution companies all over the TV. And I said, okay, we're into the new tax year. And what this is telling me is the tax resolution companies know that American taxpayers are going to be in even more trouble than they were last year. People weren't able to make their quarterly payments because if you've got a quarterly payment to the IRS and you've got your mortgage, you're going to pay your mortgage first. And that's just the reality that's going on. And so last year, the statistics were that one out of every five households in the United States was in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service, and I am going to speculate now that it may be more than one-third as we head into 2009. And the IRS and the U.S. government may have realized that there is nothing that is going to push the American people into a revolt faster than the Sheriff of Nottingham's men pounding on the door, demanding to take four or five pigs and six chickens before they leave. And so I think maybe they're backing off because they realize we've hit that line, that breaking point. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And we're continuing on talking about the news, talking about the Internal Revenue Service policy of leniency. I think there's a couple of other reasons why they have decided to adopt this policy besides avoiding an outright rebellion by the American people. As we start tallying up all these bailouts and giveaways and gifts by the federal government and the Federal Reserve, we're basically looking at roughly $8 trillion in giveaways by the government just over the last few months. Now, the reality is that here in the United States, even though we have a population of 300 million, not everybody's a taxpayer. Some are simply too young, they're kids, they're children, and they don't pay taxes. A lot of people are retired, living on Social Security, and they're not paying taxes. And then, of course, we have a sizable illegal population, and they're not paying taxes. So what we have here is actually a total of about 138 million actual taxpayers here in the United States. So if you take that $8 trillion bailout and you divide it among those 138 million taxpayers, and it comes out to about $64,000 per taxpayer. $64,000 per taxpayer. Now, this is over and above the $40,000 every taxpayer is already on the hook for to cover the government's pre-existing accumulated debt that they admit to. May actually be a lot harder. And so a lot of people are probably realizing that, you know, they're waking up and saying, I can't even pay the taxes I've got now. And they're throwing another $64,000 debt on me to pay off over the rest of my life and my children's lives and my grandchildren's life. That is angering a lot of people, because we, the people who are paying these taxes, we told Congress not to do this, and they went ahead and did it anyway. And that has angered a lot of people as we go into 2009. And the other situation I think is going on is that as the taxes get completely, hopelessly out of control, taxpayers are going to reach a point where they just give up. They say, I can't possibly pay this. Let them come take my business. It's failing anyway. Let them come take my car. It's a rust bucket. I bought American and it's falling apart. Sure, let the government take it. Take over the payments. Let them try and keep oil in it. You know, I can't deal with the situation, so I'm going to quit trying. I think Americans are really at that point. And I think as Americans reach that point of desperation where they realize it's not even a question of whether they want to pay their taxes or not, they simply can't. And when they reach that point of desperation and fear and anger, they're going to be a lot more receptive to this idea that maybe the taxes aren't legal to begin with. Certainly they're way too high. Certainly they're far higher than Americans agreed to want to pay. We keep voting for the politician who says they'll lower taxes. And then somehow, despite all the talk about lowering taxes, we all wind up paying just a little bit more. I know the big campaign debate between McCain and Obama was tax the rich versus tax the middle class, lower middle class tax break, upper class tax break. That's a false dichotomy. We're all taxed too much. We all need tax breaks. And I'm not talking a few percentage points here and there. I'm talking 50% cuts across the board to revive our economy. Now, we're going to have to live without some things. When you talk about cutting the federal budget by one half, we're going to have to give up certain things, like killing brown people and sending weapons and ammunition and supplies to Israel so that they can kill brown people. I know it's a huge sacrifice, but I, for one, am willing to make it. I am willing to live without killing brown people so that we can get our nation's economy back on track. A lot of people won't agree with me, the military-industrial complex. You know, if you're a weapons maker, you're doing very well in this economy. But for everybody else, the money gets sucked out of us, it gets blown up in a huge fireball someplace in another part of the world, and nothing comes back from it. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Gaza are economic disasters for the United States. And they still keep on doing it, and it's just amazing. And I think the reason for this leniency program, I think it's an acknowledgement that the U.S. government realizes they have pushed the American people to the point where we're having a crisis of confidence. We don't believe the government anymore. We don't believe the taxes are legal. We don't believe they're just, that's for sure. We absolutely don't believe that they're just, because we have seen them over the last several months. They're taking money from us, the working people of America, to give to people who are already so rich, they don't remember how many houses they've got. And the reason they're just giving it away and they're not paying attention, and the reason everybody shrugs when AIG takes their government bailout and throws parties for their executives, it isn't where they're spending the money. Under our monetary system, the Federal Reserve, money doesn't exist until somebody borrows it. Then they just create the money out of thin air and put it into circulation. And if you really think about it, the whole Federal Reserve system is a gigantic pyramid scheme. I've got a lot of people who say, oh, please don't call it a Ponzi scheme. Ponzi is something else entirely, and I don't know why they're... Okay, so we're going to call it a pyramid scheme. But it's still crooked, and it's still illegal, and it is still ultimately doomed to failure, even having lasted almost 100 years. Because the Federal Reserve debt-based fiat monetary system works only when there's an ever-expanding base of new borrowers coming into the system. As long as our population is growing and new young people are being suckered into student loans and car loans and home loans and book loans and plasma TV loans and clothing loans and whatever, as long as they're being suckered in there, new money is being created, which flows through circulation and is used to pay off the older loans. Because remember, when you have a debt-based monetary system, the instant it goes into operation, more money is owed than actually exists. And so the only way to keep the system going is you must find more borrowers to create more money to make the payments on the older loans. It's exactly like a pyramid or Ponzi scheme. The new people's money is taken in to pay off the old people's investments and loans. And the bottom line is, even with 300 million Americans, and even having lasted 100 years, we have hit the point where there are no new borrowers coming in, certainly not in the volume needed to sustain the system. That's why the interest rates have almost hit zero. They're desperate to get people to come in. As bad as the economy is, I am still getting brand new credit card solicitations every day in the mail. I'm just absolutely astounded, you know, that they're just throwing credit cards at me as hard as they can. I think I'm going to fill out one of these applications in my dog's name, see if I can get a credit card for her. And so we're really at this point where the system is starting to stutter. So what the government is doing, the reason for all these giveaways and bailouts is the government cannot convince Americans to go out and borrow more money so the Federal Reserve System can create new money to put into circulation. So the government's borrowing it on our behalf. $700 billion here, a trillion there, another trillion there, another $600 billion there, $20, $30 billion here, and on and on and on. And it doesn't matter what the money's actually being used for, as long as this new debt borrowed on our behalf can be used to generate new money to keep the system going. And that's really what it is. The government, against your will and against your wishes, is borrowing trillions of dollars and sticking you with the payments just to keep the Federal Reserve pyramid running a little bit longer. And it is not going to work because we're not creating products to bring new real money, real value into the United States. And so all that's happening is these Treasury certificates that the government prints up and sends over to the Federal Reserve to say, we are borrowing more money from you. Those are going to become worthless because nobody wants them. And the dollar is going to crash because they're just printing up so many of them. And, you know, the system is stuttering and it's coming apart. This is why Bernie Madoff got a free walk on his Ponzi scheme. The whole system's a Ponzi scheme. The whole Federal Reserve, it's a pyramid. And it's falling apart. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We got a few more things to talk about before the end of the day here. It's just it's a crazy, crazy time. And this commercial in this last break was talking about boiling the frog solely. And one of the ways that we're being boiled is absurdity. Our country, our government, our reality is getting just a little more absurd every day, and we kind of go along with it. But I think 50 years from now, not even that, 20 years from now, historians are going to look back at the last days of the great American empire, and they're going to be scratching their heads and just in amazement at how crazy it got here, just as we do when we study the decline and fall of Rome and the days of Caligula and just how completely wacko bananas the halls of power got. Now, I'm getting, I got an email here over the break from a reader who says, the movement to free Jonathan J. Pollard is getting strong, and it looks like he will be pardoned by Bush before leaving the office. I would like you to do some investigation and let the world know who is Jonathan J. Pollard, what is his crime, why he was sentenced, and who is trying to get him out of jail. There is an article about him in the January edition of the January 9th edition of Newsweek. Okay, well, in brief, as we talk about the amount of money that you are told you owe the U.S. government, a lot of that, believe it or not, is still leftover accumulated payments from the building of America's nuclear arsenal. And, you know, this was basically after World War II, and the military-industrial complex said, okay, the Russians helped us defeat Hitler, but now they're the bad guys, so we're going to go on taking tax money from you all and build up these really big rockets and these really big bombs, and it's going to be so wonderful that we have these really big bombs and everything. And they spent a lot of money. They spent $5 trillion. And I know right now that doesn't sound like it's all that much money in this day and age, but back then, we're talking the 1950s, 1940s, 1950s, $5 trillion was some real money. Okay? I mean, most young Americans don't realize how the dollar has declined in value. And I'll give you a good example here. The other day I had to go buy a new three-hole punch at the local office supply place, and most of them looked like they were falling apart, just sitting right there on the shelf. So I bought the best one, most durable one they had there, and I spent more on this three-hole punch last week than I paid for my first car when I was back just out of high school. So that'll tell you the kind of difference in money we're talking about. So $5 trillion to build America's nuclear arsenal. Jonathan J. Pollard stole secrets, targeting information, and gave it to Israel because he thought Israel ought to have the information. Now, that decision was a little bit above his pay grade. Israel at first tried to deny he was spying for them, then turned out, yeah, he was, and we were running him. And they just recently uncovered another agent who was being handled by the same Israeli handler. So the situation's gotten even uglier than that. But the point of this is Israel, supposedly our friend in the Middle East, a nation that has taken from you, the taxpayer, four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program and has yet to give us back a great step for mankind that we can point to with pride. Israel, our friend, turned around and traded those nuclear secrets to Russia, to the Soviet Union, the very nation we were building our nuclear deterrent against, in exchange for increased immigration quotas for Russian Jews to move to Israel. In a stroke, Israel completely undermined America's nuclear deterrent. If the Russians had decided to attack at that moment, they would have won. That's what this whole Jonathan Pollard spy scandal and Israel's all about. Pollard stole our nuclear secrets that your parents and grandparents paid $5 trillion for, and you're still paying the leftover payments on all of that. And he gave it to Israel. Israel gave it to the enemy that we were supposedly building this nuclear arsenal to defend against. And this is supposed to be our friend in the Middle East. And now they are lobbying President Bush to pardon this guy. Now, back when Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were caught stealing nuclear secrets, they were sent to the electric chair for the damage they had done to the United States security apparatus. Jonathan Pollard was sentenced to life in prison. I think he should stay there. I think if George Bush pardons Jonathan Pollard and sends him home to Israel, where he will be welcomed as a hero, it's a slap in the face of the American taxpayers who are still paying the tab on all these nuclear weapon systems that cost us so much money. As Eisenhower said, every bomb built is a theft of food from the hungry, and shelter from the homeless. It is humanity hanging on a cross of iron. And he was absolutely correct. If you need to go back, if you haven't seen it, find Eisenhower's farewell address where he talks about the military-industrial complex. We should have listened. The guy really knew what he was talking about. I remember he made this comment about it. He said, the United States would be destroyed when we got a president during wartime who really didn't understand war and the military, which is exactly what happened here. We got a bunch of bozos in the White House who think war is cool because they're watching it on TV screens. So this thing about Jonathan Pollard, it angers me that our government is even considering letting him go. They should have put him up in front of a firing squad. They did the same thing with the Mossad agents they arrested right after 9/11. Remember the dancing Israelis that were there videotaping the airplanes hitting the World Trade Towers, and they were high-fiving and cheering and having a wonderful time? And they were being so obvious about it that the police arrested them. Three of them turned out to be Mossad agents. And they just shipped them back home again. And as long as the United States government just catches these Israelis, it's catch and release. They catch the Israeli spies, they send them home. There's no reason for Israel not to send more spies. They sit over there and say, go spy in the United States. They won't do anything to you. They'll slap you on the wrist and they'll send you back home again. You know, and you'll have had a chance to visit Disneyland. So, go over there. Sell some Zoom copters. Now, a week ago, we related this story. As you probably have already know by now, there's this huge glut of these Holocaust stories that are peddled all over the bookstores, and an embarrassingly large percentage of them turn out to be hoaxes. And there was one that was basically pulled from publication last week. It was this love story about these people who found themselves love in a Nazi concentration camp. And when it was revealed to be a complete hoax, it was pulled from publication. Amazingly enough, they're going to go ahead with publication. They're just going to put a little sticker on it saying this is actually a work of fiction, but you should buy it and read it anyway because the guy needs the money, and it's a story about the Holocaust, and everybody loves stories about the Holocaust. Utterly shameless that they would go ahead and put this thing out, you know, after it's been revealed as a complete hoax. Speaking of complete hoaxes, we're going to touch on global warming for a minute here. The Eiffel Tower has been closed by snow and ice. That's a new one. It has happened a few times before in history, but it's, given that we're supposed to be in this warming period, it was a bit of a surprise. The North Sea is freezing along its coastline. That hasn't happened since the 1960s. And, of course, the newest effort to try and spin global warming, meaning global cooling, into an excuse to extract yet more money from us all, they're going to put a tax on cow flatulence, because cow flatulence is methane, which is also a greenhouse gas. By the way, your flatulence is also methane, which is why you should never let your flatulence go when you're holding a lit match. If nobody ever told you that growing up, now you know. So it's, as I've been saying all along, this whole global warming nonsense, and now they're trying to spin it that, well, the global cooling is the fault of human-caused global warming. It's a push for taxes. They need another excuse to take more money from you that you will go along with. They're trying to sucker you into more taxes and giving up control over your life. Remember, we're dealing with government and politicians. They live to legislate and control. They're control freaks. Freedom is telling them no. Tell them to go jump in a lake and take their global warming with them. All right, that's it for today's show. We're going to be back tomorrow night. We're trying to get some interesting guests in for the rest of the week. We're trying to get some people coming in from Gaza, if they're still alive. And so until then, stay safe, be well, and aloha, America.